Good morning and welcome to another episode here at The Damage Report. I am Johnny Arola. Today is Tuesday and it's a very exciting Tuesday for at least two reasons. The first is that this is my last show of the week. I'm going to be going to Lee's Summit, Missouri to politically detox and recuperate from a bit of burnout. And during the time that I'm away, Francesca Fiorentini will be taking over as well as Brett Ehrlich. So that's very exciting. But even that pales in comparison to the announcement that I have for you right now. Joining me for the first time as a co-host on the show, Senator Nina Turner.
Hello. Nina, how's it going? It's going well, John. How are you today?
I'm doing well. I started to suspect in the run up to today's show that I had revealed too much. So I blatantly lied on the pre-show and said that my friend Quay was gonna be co-hosting, but no, it's you. You've been on the show a number of times, but this is the first time as a co-host. So we're very excited to have you here.
Yeah, I'm so glad to be with you. And yes, several times. I feel like I'm back home.
I think so. By the way, the Twitch chat is just your face over and over and over again. They're very excited about that.
Thank you, Twitch chat. Yes.
Yes. So look, obviously, you know, I and many of the people in the audience have been a big supporter of what you're trying to accomplish for a number of years. And you know, the experience and perspective you're gonna bring to the show is already much appreciated. So thank you.
Well, my pleasure. Glad to be with you.
And glad to have you here. And we're glad to have everyone in the audience here as well, regardless of what platform you're on. Thank you for being here. Over the course of the next 90 minutes or so, we're gonna talk about a lot. We're gonna be jumping into not only some of the controversy coming out of the Met Gala last night and some of the attached vaccine related controversy. We're also gonna be talking about infrastructure, Kyrsten Sinema's spreadsheets, voting rights, and a whole bunch more. We're actually gonna have a bit of a throwback to close out the show. A political figure that most people have forgotten about, possibly hinting at a comeback. So we'll be talking about that a little bit later on. Along the way, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream, that would be great. And if you wanna send us comments, tweets, super chats, anything like that, we'll respond as we go. But that said, Nina, you ready to talk about some news?
Yes, do that.
Okay, let's do it. By the way, heads up to the audience, it's gonna start off weird. So anyway. Last night's Met Gala produced a couple different controversies, but the one that really tore up Twitter had to do with Nicki Minaj, someone who in fact was not actually at the Met Gala, but in tweeting about it started talking a bit about vaccination and side effects. And it has resulted in her becoming basically the most attacked person online over the last 24 hours or so. So what did she actually say? Well, she tweeted, "My cousin in Trinidad won't get the vaccine because his friend got it and became impotent. His testicles became swollen. His friend was weeks away from getting married. Now the girl called off the wedding. So just pray on it and make sure you're comfortable with your decision, not bullied." The connection of the Met is that what she also tweeted, "They want you to get vaccinated for the Met. If I get vaccinated, it won't be for the Met. It'll be once I feel I've done enough research. I'm working on that now. In the meantime, my loves, be safe. Wear the mask with two strings that grips your head and face, not that loose one." Now, some people have presented that last tweet as her saying she was not going to the Met Gala because they require you to get vaccinated. She is not happy with that characterization of her comments. And admittedly, she doesn't say that, but the language is a bit loose, so I understand why there's a misconception. In any event, Nina, there's a lot there in those two tweets, and it's about something that, you know, people have strong feelings about vaccination, and even stronger feelings about the Met Gala. So what do you think?
Well, let's talk about the good, which is Nicki Minaj talked about research, which is, that's a great thing. We do want people to research and look into these matters and not just, you know, listen to any source, but listen to trusted sources and listen to what the medical doctors have to say about it. The other good part about it was she said, wear the mask, which is good. Mm-hmm. We want people, whether they're vaccinated or not, especially if they are in larger crowds, to please, 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 wear the mask. Now, the other part about her cousin, and you know, there are a lot of mischaracterizations and misunderstandings out there about the vaccine and the heightened fear that people have. What I do like, John, is the fact that there is a young lady, and I want our viewers to go and watch her. Her name is Dr. Raven, the science maven on Twitter, and she did a whole rap to the incredible Nicki Minaj about the vaccine from a scientific point of view, and a rat, no doubt. And this intellectual, she is meeting people where they are. So instead of ridiculing people or criticizing them or talking down to them, she said, Nikki, here's a rap that breaks down the vaccine and what it does. And I'm telling you, John, it is absolutely magnificent. So I want folks to go to Dr. Raven, the science maven on Twitter, and listen to her cool, hip, and scientifically based response.
That Nikki sounds great. And the fact that she came up with that so quickly after the guy, that's really impressive. I do like
it
that.
It is very much so.
And you know, I'm glad that you acknowledge the good, like she does push for masking and stuff like that. So look, I'm not interested in just, you know, piling on Nicki Minaj. Certainly a lot of people have already done it. And look, it's complicated because of course she has a lot of followers, and so people are worried about the spread of misinformation. But she's also a singer. Like, she's not a scientist, she's not a politician. That doesn't mean that she shouldn't be responsible or whatever, but like, she never on Twitter, I don't think, said, by the way, follow me for your medical information. So who knows? And piling on her might make her less likely to, you know, maybe correct this a bit at some point. But what I will say is that I feel a bit bad for the cousin in Trinidad, and especially bad for the friend, because man, they did not know they would become the worldwide focus of conversation. What I will also say is that the speculation I have seen is that if the story is accurate as it's being presented, that this guy became impotent, had his testicles swell, and then his girlfriend called off their wedding, that sounds more like the result of an STI than a vaccine side effect. But I, like Nicki Minaj, am not a doctor. And so, you know.
And you don't play one on TV either, John.
No, I don't. I watch it, but I don't.
Yeah, I mean, this is a complicated situation. Nikki, at least from what I read in her tweets, was telling a story based on some information she got from her cousin. Let's just put that right there. There are all kinds of other issues surrounding this story, as you just laid out, John, that we may not ever know the other details to. Piling on Nicki Minaj makes absolutely no sense. I think people need to do more of what the good doctor did, and just really get in there and try to help people understand the vaccine, what is behind the vaccine, what is the scientific basis of the vaccine, and why we must get to herd immunity, not just in this country, but in the world. So instead of using that information, or instead of using energy, in my opinion, to pile on to Nicki Minaj, other than pointing out, Nicki, maybe you shouldn't have shared this story without having all of the other medical facts, I think that's a fair assessment to make. But just jumping on Nicki Minaj over her comments doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Let's just try to make this right and get people the best information that we can about the vaccine and why it is important to get vaccinated.
Agreed. And I will now do that. I mean, not really me. I'm gonna read what much smarter doctors have said about this. And you know, look, in general terms, we've done thousands of COVID stories and hundreds about vaccination. So everybody watching this knows that you're far more likely to survive a bout with COVID if you're vaccinated. You're far less likely to be hospitalized, experience bad side effects of COVID. But this has raised the topic of fertility, the reproductive system, and all that. So let's focus a little bit on that. Currently, according to the CDC, there's no evidence that shows that any vaccines, including COVID-19 vaccines, cause male fertility problems. A recent small study of 45 healthy men who received an mRNA COVID-19 vaccine looked at sperm characteristics like quantity and movement before and after vaccination. Researchers found no significant changes in those sperm characteristics after vaccination. So that's about fertility, but there was also brought up the impotence thing. So bear in mind, COVID-19 can cause swelling and inflammation in the penis. It can also damage blood vessels and lower or prevent blood from reaching tissues and organs. If blood can't reach your penis, having an erection will be more difficult. And certainly there's been a lot of talk throughout the pandemic about that. So if your fear is impotence, fear less the vaccine than the virus that could potentially do real damage to you. And by the way, fever from illness has been associated with a short-term decrease in sperm production in healthy men. Although fever can be a side effect of COVID vaccination, there is no current evidence that fever after COVID vaccination affect sperm production, but the fever from COVID in theory could. So I am glad that the topic of, you know, people take this seriously, it's reproduction, and men certainly take it seriously. Get vaccinated. That seems like your best protection. Any thoughts?
I mean, fever accompanies lots of illnesses too, Josh. So let's just put this out there. And I know the heightness, you know, I was just not feeling well, called a love bug, as one of my dear friends called it from my beloved minister of cuteness, my grandson. But I had a really severe cold and some of the symptoms were rendering as if it could have been COVID, although I am vaccinated. Oh. And the first thing my team said, S&T, go get the test. And I did, COVID free. It was a severe cold. And so having the chills or having a fever, you can get that with the common cold. You can get that with having the flu, a whole host of viruses that we have come to have to live with and try to tame over the course of human existence. And so I'm so glad that you read what the medical experts have to say on this issue. The bottom line is, please go see a doctor if you have any symptoms. Don't listen, John and I, we are not doctors. All we can do is share the medical information that is out there. But what is not controversial is that if you are not feeling well for any reason, please, for the love of God, go see a doctor.
100%. And as you point out, like you're vaccinated. I've talked about being vaccinated. I posted a photo of me being vaccinated. You are much less likely to get COVID, but it is still possible. And so still need to be responsible. I announced in the beginning of the show, I'm going to be taking the rest of the week off. It's a trip I had planned months ago to go to Gen Con in Indianapolis, which I have missed during this pandemic. I'm not going, actually. I'm instead going to my friend Quay's house. That's it, to avoid being in big crowds. It sucks. I really miss going to conventions, but it's still a pandemic. So do everything you can to protect yourself. That starts with vaccination, but that's hardly the end of it. We were going to go into a bit about Tucker Carlson. He routinely takes artists, especially women of color like Nicki Minaj, and attacks them as signs of moral decline and stuff like that. Well, he suddenly found a reason to defend her. I have a feeling he'll go back to attacking her in the very near future. So I'm not actually going to play the video. But did you have any thoughts about that, Senator Turner?
Tucker Carlson is going to Tucker Carlson. I mean, really.
That's all he knows how to do.
I'm just gonna leave it right there, John. I'm with you on this one. Just gonna leave it right there.
Okay. I really go back and forth. He's got a lot of audience, and so sometimes I want to rebut the things he says, but seeing his stupid face makes me sick, so I can't often do it. Anyway, we are gonna take our first break, though, everybody, and read some of your comments and all of that. But when we come back, we'll be talking about the infrastructure bill, Senator Kyrsten Sinema, and voting rights as well. The Democrats have a new bill. We'll be breaking down what it does and what it doesn't do after this. Okay, buddy, before we jump back into the news, there is one thing I forgot to do before the break. And that is that while the Nicki Minaj controversy was certainly a big one last night, having to do with the Met Gala, perhaps even bigger was Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's tax the rich dress, which I did talk about a bit in the pre-show. I understand it is controversial, although I don't necessarily understand why. And apparently the audience mostly agreed with me, although I did not expect that that would be the case. Well, let's do another test. We've got a poll up right now at tyt.com/polls asking you the question, was AOC's tax the rich dress at the Met Gala a good idea or a bad idea? Very simple. Just curious to see what you have to say. So go to tyt.com/polls to fill that out. And we're gonna try to get the results back to you by the end of the show today. So head over there if you want to take part. That said, Nina, you ready for some more politics?
Let's do it.
Okay, let's talk about taxes and how the Democrats are doing everything they can to not really tax the rich. Okay. Kyrsten Sinema is effectively, like Senator Manchin, the president, because if she decides that a piece of legislation shouldn't pass, I guess it's not going to pass. And she has some issues with what's currently being debated by the Democrats right now, which is the infrastructure bill. And I happened to see a write-up about her strategy on Axios, and I had a little bit of a problem with the way they were presenting it. So let's dive into a little bit. Again, this is directly from Axios, and we'll talk a little bit more broadly about the bill. They say Senator Kyrsten Sinema is negotiating the size and scope of President Biden's $3.5 trillion budget plan, armed with her own spreadsheets about the costs and tax hikes needed for each program. People familiar with the matter tell Axios that certainly weren't sent there by her team. While Senator Joe Manchin is getting attention for balking at a $3.5 trillion top line price tag, Sinema's accountant-like focus on the bottom line will be equally important to winning the votes of them and other key Democrats. And they go on to say, Sinema's intense interest in the numbers also suggests she'll be a formidable foil for progressives like Senator Bernie Sanders, who are working to make the spending bill as big as possible. Now there's more, but Senator Turner, like Axios, basically they would say, we just present the facts or whatever, but that sure seems like a sympathetic view of what she's doing right now. What do you think?
Yeah, if they had just laid out the fact that she has these charts, that's one thing, but the commentary surrounding this as if she is some big power player in this scenario is just, it makes me want to holler really loudly. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to save up my energy as I recover here and not use it to holler and scream about the Congresswoman Sinema. But the $3.5 trillion is a compromise. That is already the compromise position, because some were arguing for $6 trillion and others even $10 trillion. We have not done a whole lot in this nation over over the last 20 years, some might even argue 50 years really, to really shore up the infrastructure in this nation, and to somehow pretend as though $3.5 trillion is a lot of money given the neglect over decades, that is insanity. And you know what, John, one other point. The fact that injecting that money into this economy could put so many people back to work, there's so much good that can happen here. First of all, high paying jobs, good paying jobs for things that we need in this country. These are not luxuries we're talking about. We're talking about necessities of rebuilding roads and bridges, greening along the way for the future. So it's just the way that they're positioning Congresswoman Sinema doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
I totally agree. You know, yesterday we showed Senator Manchin saying, you know, at a time when there's so much uncertainty and we've lost so many jobs, I think we need a pause. Well, if we lost jobs, I think funding infrastructure projects seems like a pretty good way to get some back. But he doesn't even engage with that idea. And Axios doesn't even really engage with their premise. Their premise here is that she is just focused on the bottom line. She's basically an accountant. And she just wants to make sure that we don't spend any more that we have to. Well, first of all, I would ask you, does anyone remember that being what Kyrsten Sinema ran on? Like that was what she presented herself as? Like a fiscal conservative, really worried about the debt, not interested in taxes. She presented herself as like a former Green candidate, like a progressive. That's what I remember. Where's that? And by the way, feel free, jump in.
No, I'm sorry, Joe. I mean, more worried about the donor class than she is about the people in this country who could use this. Can I just, I want to invite Dr. Robert Reich, if I may, into our conversation, John. He says, can the media stop acting like the Dems' $3.5 trillion budget package is some incomprehensible expenditure? It's a $3.5 trillion over 10 years. Can I slip a hello somebody in there? Hello somebody. Meanwhile, we spend more than $700 billion on defense every single year. That equates to more than $7 trillion over 10 years. Where is the media outrage on that? And so let me add to what the good Dr. Robert Reich said. Where is Congresswoman Sinema or Senator Manchin's outrage over that? Mm-hmm. We need 100%. To get our priorities straight.
You're totally right. Yeah. You know, I hate that they call it the Department of Defense. It's just about defense. We're basically building walls and armor. That's all. It's the Department of Bombs. That's what it is. You know what defends people? Vaccines, safe bridges, elder care. That defends people a lot more. I'm not worried about a Canadian soldier shooting me. I am worried about, you know, advanced illness. Have you seen my diet? It's coming. I want to make sure that the healthcare system is ready for it.
Yes, exactly.
But anyway, I would just love to hear from Senator Sinema, like, because this is not an accident. She sent people to Axios, or Axios just decided to do a favor for her. Okay, then if that's what you're gonna do, and it's about the spreadsheets, which program is too expensive? Which does she think needs more funding? Or is it that all of them need to be cut? Let me see what's in these actual spreadsheets, because what it sounds like is she just doesn't want to spend the money. And I could have told you that without this glossy PR write-up. She wants to stop the government from delivering for the people. That's not new, and it ain't about spreadsheets. She has a knee-jerk reaction to anything the government does that helps people. Sometimes she literally jerks her knees down into a little squatting thumbs down. That's what she does. Don't try to gussy it up and make her seem like some sort of like by the numbers professional. She's a reactionary who doesn't want the government to deliver for the working class. That's all it is.
That's exactly it, John. And the senator needs to get a clue. I mean, so many of these people, and thank you, I'm sorry, my apology, I referred to her as Congresswoman before. But you know, the senator needs to really get a clue. And some of these people have lost touch. They don't live the everyday lives or can't even, you know, even if they did in the past, because I'm not saying that everybody that is in the Congress as a whole, whether they're on the Senate side or the House side, have never had to endure poverty. But so many of them are so far from it that they have really lost contact, have lost track. And if the dear senator really wants to get a clue instead of doing spreadsheets, come on to Cleveland, Ohio. Cleveland is the poorest city of its size in the United States of America. I invite the senator, come on with me. And we won't have to do spreadsheets. We just go ahead and get a real life tour. Really, they should be there. Government is designed for us to do collectively what we cannot do as individuals. That is what it is designed to do. And some of these people do not understand that, or they just really don't care to understand that.
Yeah. And I think a visit to a bunch of different cities would be great. I think her visiting a few of the cities in Arizona wouldn't be that bad of an idea.
How about
we have
that?
A lot of viewers in Arizona, and from what they say, there's actually some problems that an infrastructure bill might fix there. Anyway, okay, so let's talk about a related issue. Another big part of the infrastructure bill is going to be how you pay about it. Because remember, the only things that are free are wars. Everything else has to be paid for. And here is the latest on what sort of tax increases the Democrats are considering and which they are not to pay for the reconciliation bill. So according to the New York Times, facing the delicate politics of a narrowly divided Congress, which is just another way of saying having to deal with Manchin, Sinema, Tester, and a few others potentially. Senior House Democrats opted to be more mindful of moderate concerns in their party than of its progressive ambitions. They focused on traditional ways of raising revenue by raising tax rates on income rather than targeting wealth itself. So look, for a lot of regular people, that doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense. What's the big difference between those two things? But there is a big difference, and we're going to get into it. The bill dispenses with measures floated by the White House and Senate Democrats to tax wealth or to close off avenues that the super rich have exploited to pass on a lifetime of gains to their heirs tax-free. So how does this work out? Well, the richest of the rich don't actually earn much income. Like for you and I, our income is our wealth. That's what we have and we spend it to survive. But for instance, Jeff Bezos, his salary was $81,840 in 2020. So I don't really care how much you jack up the surtax on his income. It's not gonna get much. That's not how he makes money. His vast fortune in stocks, bonds, real estate, and other assets growing largely untaxed each year, as we've been talking about. There was that big analysis by the Center for Public Integrity earlier this year. That's how he makes money. And there have been people who've been talking about a wealth tax that would affect that sort of way of building wealth over time. But as of right now, Nina, that is not what the Democrats are considering. It's very much just focused on their yearly income.
Well, I know we're gonna get into the Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez's dress. That just do with that dress. Let's just go ahead and tax the wealthy. They need to tax the wealthy. We need a wealth tax in this country far too often. And not just the Bezos. I mean, even it's not just the one, it's the less than 1%. That we're really talking about here, who have gained tremendously during this pandemic. But meanwhile, in the highways and byways all across this country, the people who are among the poor, the working poor, and the barely middle class continue to suffer, continue to only barely get by. And as a nation, we continue to be skittish, and I'm using we loosely, but yes. The members of the Congress, and when I say the Congress, I mean both houses of the Congress, not all, because some do have the courage to say that we must tax the wealth of the wealthiest people in this country who are not paying anything in federal taxes. Their corporations are not paying a dime in federal taxes. They are, in fact, I mean, starving, because again, going back to my original premise, government is designed for us to do collectively what we cannot do as individuals. So we got to have money in that pot. And who better to put money in that pot than the ultra, ultra wealthy in this country so that we can help people pursue life, liberty, and everybody's happiness? How about that?
100%. Let's do that. 100%. Yeah, and I'm just gonna throw this out there because people are gonna hear a lot of misinformation about wealth taxes. You're not gonna hear a lot about wealth taxes, but maybe in a few years, maybe 2024, there'll be some people who are running on wealth taxes. You know what a wealth tax does? It funds things that the working class need. You know what it doesn't do? Stop wealthy people from being wealthy. There ain't no wealth tax that's ever gonna do that. You could take the most radical wealth tax, shoot it full of the super soldier serum. They still build wealth over time. It just slows it a bit. It slows the growth of wealth of people who can buy virtually everything in the world. They can literally buy islands. They can't think of things to buy. They have so much money and they will still be getting more wealthy. We just won't be suffering as much along the way. That's all it is. But that's just me.
Even take a trip into space.
Yeah.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph. Yes, I'm 100%. Calling them Jesus, Mary and Joseph. Just take a trip into space so they can monk it up there too. I'd rather they just stay down here. We got to deal with planet Earth. Don't go up into the stratosphere making trouble.
Yeah, or go and don't come back. One of the two. But by the way, really fast, that was just what we think about the wealth tax. Representative Bill Pascrell, a Democrat of New Jersey, says, "I'm very suspect of a wealth tax. I think it's perceived as soak the rich. I don't think it is, but that's how it's perceived." Oh, well, you know, if only there was a way we could fight back against that, representative. People think things are, well, first of all, who thinks it's soak the rich? Is it the rich? I don't think a lot of working class people are like, well, come on, let's not soak the rich now. That's not how working people think. And even if some do, you're a representative. Go on TV, talk to them about it. Killing it while talking about soak the rich is hardly a way you fight back against that if that was what you really wanted to do. And I suspect that it is perhaps not.
That's right. I mean, if some of these members of Congress are more concerned about the everyday people of the nation, they're more concerned about the ultra wealthy than they are about the teacher, the social worker, you know, the Uber driver, the nurses. You know, if they really were more concerned about those types of people than they are about people who are never gonna have to worry about a dime for the rest of their natural lives. And if they have children, their children and children's children and children's children and so on and so forth. But meanwhile, back in the neighborhoods and misunderstood, people are worried about things like paying their rent, their mortgage, their car note, getting the medications that they need. And oh, by the way, just putting food on the table. So how about these folks focus in on that and make that the centering? Let's change the material conditions of the poor, the working poor, and the barely middle class for a change in this country. That's woo, these people make me want to holler. Really.
I agree. Well, feel free. I want to hear it. Okay, we're gonna talk about one more thing before we jump to our second break, and that is the big domestic, political, legislative breaking news. The Democrats have unveiled their new voting bill, the Freedom to Vote Act. So what does this do? Well, it builds off a framework proposed by West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, so get hyped, who had opposed an earlier sweeping measure from his party. That's a reminder, you might be thinking, wait, what do you mean they've got their new voting bill? Didn't they already have two voting bills? They had the For the People Act. And then they had the one that Joe Manchin supported. So no, now they have a new one. Okay, so what does this one do? We've got videos up explaining the others, and there was certainly a lot in the For the People Act that Senator Manchin would never approve of, and by which I mean his corporate donors would never approve of. So anyway, the revised bill would make Election Day a public holiday, ensure every state offers same day voter registration, set minimum federal standards on mail voting, and ban partisan gerrymandering among its provisions. The bill also includes Manchin's call for a voter identification provision, but would allow voters casting ballots in person to present a broad set of identification cards and documents in hard copy and digital form, according to the statement. Now let's give the senator a chance to defend this. He says the right to vote is fundamental to our democracy, and the Freedom to Vote Act is a step in the right direction towards protecting that right for every American. As elected officials, we also have an obligation to restore people's faith in our democracy. And I believe that the common sense provisions in this bill, like flexible voter ID requirements, will do just that. Okay, so some good, and then also the voter ID stuff. Senator Turner, what do you think?
I mean, what was wrong with For the People Act and the John Lewis voting right bill? What's wrong with those two? He didn't have to go up and create a whole another bill. That's the question that I want the dear senator to answer. Yeah, some of the things that are in that bill, yeah, they're perfectly fine. But those elements, some of those elements are in both the For the People Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. So what is wrong with those? And for elected officials like him to continue to hype up that people are just randomly going out impersonating other folks to vote, it is just not happening. Even the Brennan Center said you have a more likelihood of being struck by lightning than you do of people impersonating other folks to go vote. And furthermore, states already have rules using the term colleagues loosely all over this country are upending voter access. But I'm gonna put that to the side. The bottom line is that you have too many politicians like Senator Joe Manchin and others, particularly Republicans on the state level, that are getting people all amped up over something that is minimal. And even if it does exist, minimally exist, there are state laws already on the books to deal with people who may engage in voter fraud. But you know what the biggest fraud is here? All of these all of the things that people like Senator Joe Manchin and others are doing to stop people from having access, unfettered access to the ballot box. That is the fraud.
Yeah, 100%. I'm sick of people continually playing in to the idea that our elections aren't secure when there's no evidence that they're not secure. How about we find the evidence if it comes up? And then we deal with it. I feel that's like right. We could do that. Maybe we don't need to waste our time fixing problems that don't exist while also causing problems for a ton of people that are not gonna be able to provide ID no matter how flexible you make it. And by the way, you're 100% right. So we look at the good stuff in this, and it's good. It'd be great to have all those things. It should be a national holiday, although as people are pointing out in the chat, it being a national holiday does not mean that everyone gets it, which means that there should be some sort of enforcement mechanism. Like, sure, you don't have to give your workers the day off for Democracy Day, but there's a $10,000 fine for each worker you don't, or something like that. But for all the stuff that's good in here, it's in the other bills. I don't see anything in here that's not in those other bills. So how does that make sense? It's not the same as the other bills, which means, it doesn't have stuff that's in those, like the anti-corruption measures, like the campaign finance disclosure measures, the sorts of things that wealthy donors and corporate PACs are not interested in being enshrined in law. And here at TYT, I know Jenks talked about it a lot. We've been speculating from the very beginning that there's no chance the For the People Act passes until those things are stripped out, because there's no way Joe Manchin, and not just Joe Manchin, others too, Tester potentially, there's a good number of Democrats that are there to protect the interests of their corporate overlords. They were not going to let it pass until that was stripped out. But there's one more issue with this. And that is that while Joe Manchin had all that blah, blah, blah to say about his bill, he also said yesterday, the filibuster is permanent. So good luck passing the bill, which you know won't happen as long as the filibuster's there. So that was a fun little conversation. It's not gonna happen, I guess, Nina Turner.
This man
is not gonna get rid of the filibuster.
He playing games, just straight up. The man is playing games with democracy. He's playing games with people's lives. The history of the filibuster, it has been used most often to block civil rights advances, racial justice advances in the United States of America. And this man knows this. He is full of stuff. You know, fill in the blank. Fill in the blank. He is full of it, and he is playing games.
Yeah, I agree. But perhaps he messed up, because when he said the filibuster is permanent, do you know who he's going against? A gladiator, a fighter. Joe Biden, Joe Biden's been saying in recent weeks that he'll be pressuring wavering Democrats to support reforming the filibuster if necessary to pass the voting bill. He vowed as a candidate that one of the first things he'd do is pass new legislation to protect voting rights, including restoring the landmark Voting Rights Act of 1965, which by the way isn't even a part of this bill. But according to a source briefed on the White House's position, Biden told Chuck Schumer, "Chuck, you tell me when you need me to start making phone calls." And bear in mind, his position on reforming or removing the filibuster has been evolving. In early March, Jen Psaki said Biden didn't support any changes to the filibuster. A few weeks later, Biden told ABC News that he supported bringing back the so-called talking filibuster, which by the way, Joe Manchin has also said and then forgets conveniently. Forcing any senator who wanted to block a vote to stand and speak on the Senate floor, you know, like you see in movies. A few months after that, Psaki declined to say whether Biden backed creating a carve out to the filibuster for legislation related to voting rights, while also distancing the White House from any potential negotiations about filibuster reform. So now he's going to start pressuring, supposedly. What do you think? Is that gonna get through to Joe Manchin?
The term reform the filibuster, those two words shouldn't go together. The filibuster must go. How you gonna reform something that is wrong to begin with? And it is holding up. I mean, I want folks to understand that having that filibuster means that every good thing that may come from the House of Representatives, that other side of the Congress, is dead on arrival in the Senate unless we get rid of the filibuster. And these folks, John, know good daggone well the history of the filibuster, and yet they all want to play games. And you know what else? Memo. A lot of these folks are hiding behind Joe Manchin. Make no mistake about it. Let's just go ahead and have that conversation if we're willing and able, that they are hiding behind President Joe Manchin.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's why, like, you know, I despise Joe Manchin. I despise Kyrsten Sinema, especially, no, both. No, especially Kyrsten Sinema, because she presented herself as a progressive. Joe Manchin has never presented himself as a progressive, although he has lied, as he has lied about the talking filibuster, as he lied earlier this year when he said he wanted $4 trillion in infrastructure spending. There's a lot of lies to go around, but Sinema fundamentally lied about what her ideology was. But that said, at least they're showing us that they're willing to grind everything to a halt. They're willing to make Biden a president in name only with no actual power. But there's other moderate Democrats, and I hate that term. There is nothing moderate about what they're doing, that are just as bad, that are certainly making threats behind the scenes, but they're not willing to actually put themselves out there. So at the very least, we can attack them. Just bear that in mind. Great point by Senator Turner there. Now, that said, we are going to take our second break, but when we come back, we're going to be giving you updates on Larry Elder. Today is the California recall, but one candidate has already declared defeat, so that's fun. We'll be giving you those details as well as what QAnon thinks is riding on this California recall after this. Before we jump back into our last story of this first hour, reminder, the poll is up at tyt.com/polls. We want to know what you think about AOC's tax the rich dress. As I said, I talked about in the pre-show, I'm just going to come out. I came in today expecting everybody hated it. The right hates it, the centrists hate it because it's AOC, and a lot of leftists hate it. Honestly, I was shocked by the audience's response, but we'll see with the poll. You can go to tyt.com/polls and let me know what you think about it. Also, a reminder that we've still got a good bit of TDR, but as soon as the show is over, the day is not. And the fun continues with Indisputable. You've got J.R. Jackson and Adrian Lawrence are taking over. I just saw that now. Dr. Rashad apparently is out for the day, but he will be back. He's off working on something, and we'll let you know soon about this project. With Dr. Richie, you never know. I don't know. He's being honored by the White House. There's Dr. Rashad Richie Day in his state. Like, God only knows what he's working on, but I'm sure it's something awesome. But Indisputable does continue, and you can watch it at youtube.com/IndisputableTYT. Oh, by the way, there's also going to be some exciting news at TYT. You can watch 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on YouTube and Twitch and everywhere else. An exciting, important announcement. I won't say what. I won't spoil it. I've been trying not to, but it's coming up. Anyway, with that, why don't we close out this hour? We're going to launch right into this video.
You win or lose, will you accept the results of the election tomorrow? I think we all ought to be looking at election integrity, no matter whether you're a Democrat, an independent, or a Republican.
Is that a commitment to accept the results of the election tomorrow?
Let's all do that together. Let's all work together on both sides of the aisle to make sure that the election is a fair election.
Is that a commitment to accept the results of the election tomorrow?
Let's all work together to find out whether or not the election tomorrow is a fair election. Let's all work together to do that.
So that is not a commitment to accept the results of the election tomorrow?
What, boy, Jacob, honestly, I answered your question.
No, you didn't. You very much did not answer his question, Larry Elder. But I think everybody watching knows what the answer is. And in fact, that's what the answer was, as you'll see soon. But before we launch into, you know, it's election day, the recall of Gavin Newsom, or the attempted recall of Gavin Newsom. Larry Elder is apparently the front running challenger, although there are many. And so it's possible that if you're watching this live or as soon as it goes up, there might still be time to vote, and you definitely should. Don't back off of democracy, or the right will destroy it. But that said, Nina Turner, what do you think about Larry Elder seeming to be playing from the Donald Trump book of just deny that any election you don't win is legit?
Seemingly, you're being kind. I mean, the answer was, look, if I win, it was legitimate. Mm-hmm. If I don't win, it's illegitimate. That's it. I mean, that's basically what Larry Elder is saying. And again, stoking up people's fears about the lack of integrity in the electoral process. He's showing a lack of integrity right there.
Yeah, 100%. And look, that's just what they're all gonna do now. Larry Elder wants to be a Republican. And so you have to say that every election is stolen. And not to say that that's totally new. I mean, there hasn't been a presidential election in my life, no matter which way it went, that some of the people who wanted the other person didn't think that it was stolen. That's always been around. But I do think what's new is having an entire party, effectively, and a media apparatus agreeing that democracy, you can't trust it. You probably shouldn't want it anyway. It's probably not going to allow us to continue permanent white conservative rule of America. So let's dispense with it. And every election that we don't win is illegitimate. And so he is just the latest instance of it. He told reporters last Wednesday that he believes, quote, there might very well be shenanigans in the recall election, which sounds fun. But there he's talking about stealing election. He says so many Americans are, or so many Californians are angry about what's going on that he expects to win anyways. But that said, with the election not even over yet, it appears that he's conceded defeat. Last Wednesday, he said he's gonna win no matter what. But if you look at his website, it's pretty clear he doesn't expect to. So what do we mean by that? Well, a link on his website labeled as report election incident takes users to a form to report incidents of voter fraud and sign a petition to investigate the results of the recall. It also states that if there is an audit of the recall, county election officials should not be a part of the recount, saying that doing so would allow an alleged criminal to examine the crime scene. It also claims that, quote, statistical analyses used to detect fraud in elections held in third world countries such as Russia, Venezuela, and Iran have detected fraud in California, resulting in Governor Gavin Newsom being reinstated as governor. But it's not even over yet. You fool, like roll that out right after. That would be pathetic. This is really pathetic that you know you're gonna lose and you're already lying about the results.
Good grief. I mean, to quote a great cartoon. A great cartoon character. Lord have mercy. I am running out of things to say about these people, John. It makes no sense. First of all, they have totally abused the recall process. It was not set up and designed to be used in the way that it is. And not only is it wasting time, it's wasting millions of dollars right now that could be used in other ways in the great state of California. You know, there's a difference between talking about dark money and big money interests coming in to influence an election in ways that it ordinarily would not be influenced. It is another thing to say that I am already going to predetermine based on polling, based on a feeling that I have that I am going to lose. And so now before I actually lose, I'm gonna lay out for you that there is some type of wholesale fraud, voter fraud going on. And let's be suspicious of the person to our left and also to our right. It is irresponsible what Mr. Elder and his campaign is doing right now.
100%. Yeah, making people not just question, but believe, I just want my guy to win. He can do whatever he wants. The other guys are fundamentally evil. They're Satanists, whatever. No, you're 100% right. The system is messed up in a million different ways, and we need to fight to fix it. That's but you right. can't just focus on understanding it's broken. You have to do the actual fighting. And they're driving people out of politics, and not just people like Larry Elder. You see it a lot. And that's why I've always told the audience, like, if you ever feel like watching this show, watching me is leading to you becoming apathetic, turn it off as fast as you can, because that should be the last thing that any endeavor like this should be producing. We have got to engage with it. It is busted up in a million different ways. And the opponents that we face are wealthy beyond imagination. They're powerful, they're well connected. It is a very scary thing to go up against, but we have to go up against it or we're never gonna fix it.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. Now, why is he preemptively declaring defeat? Well, it might be because new polling has shown that while the election was actually close, it is not now. And that's not to say that Gavin Newsom won't lose. And by the way, I don't even like Gavin Newsom, but I don't want Larry Elder as governor. But right now, the polling shows Newsom up by like almost 16 points. So bear that in mind. So he apparently believes that he is going to lose, but he wants to continue the grift. He is going to ride it out, telling people that it was stolen. That's what Trump has been doing for like a year. But going forward, assuming that this election ends the way it seems like it's going to, why is this so important for some? I don't just mean people who care about who's going to be the governor. I mean people outside of California altogether. Well, you may not know this, but the QAnon community is very interested in what happens with California and the recall. Why is that? Well, in the lead up to the recall, Anons, the people who believe in that conspiracy theory, glommed onto a December 2018 Q post. Q is the guy that supposedly knew what was going on. It was just some weirdo online. But anyway, someone asked him, will voter fraud in California ever be brought to light? And he responded, watch California. I know what you're thinking. That is highly specific. But anyway, 3 years later, there's the recall. And so they have convinced themselves that California will be stolen, that Newsom will rig the vote, it will become public, and it will be so clear that they stole the election and that they stole the November election in California, because they believe that Trump won California, that that will result in Donald Trump becoming president again. Now, maybe these are just some random weirdos. Maybe it's millions of Americans fundamentally believe insane stuff. But going into this recall, Nina, that is what some people are saying online.
I mean, being delusional is real. It really, I mean, this definitely serves no purpose again, but to get people amped up, hyped up on matters that they shouldn't be amped up about, especially in terms of the integrity of the election, the electoral process. Yeah, there are many things that we need to fix. We need to provide more funding in states so that they have the most up-to-date equipment. It really is a shame that your smartphone changes quicker than the technology, mm-hmm. To make sure that states have all the equipment that they need to make sure that elections are accessible. Now, we should be pushing for people to participate and not amping people up in very negative ways that does not serve the overall democracy. And guess what? If these people got some real evidence, let's show the real evidence. But to do things like this is just a total disservice for anybody that believes that elections should be, that we should be expanding and protecting the right to vote and not, using all of this energy and energy and money and time to get people hyped up in such a negative fashion. So again, to me, this is all delusion. This delusional folks making a process that is not good in the first place. Again, I will say this one more time. The way that recall is being used in California is not what it was designed. It was not designed to be used for somebody's frivolous, we don't like the person in the office because he wants people to wear masks, et cetera, et cetera. Yep. So we're gonna recall this person. That's not what 100%. It was designed to do.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm glad that you focused on actual things we can do. Because one of the things that sucks so much about this narrative about all the elections being rigged is like it drains the energy from actual reforms. We can make our elections secure and convenient. For the recall, they just sent me a ballot to my house and I sent it back. I didn't request it, sent it out, super simple and secure. That's how easy voting should be. My wife and I just realized, oh, here's our ballot, and we sent it back. That's what we should be aiming for. We can actually do that, but unfortunately, there are those who are standing between us and that convenient and secure of a democracy. Well, in any event, that is going to be the end of the first hour of TDR. Thank you to our linear audience. If you're on Twitch and YouTube, we do have more coming for you. We're going to take a short break, but we'll be back after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.